Hi everyone, Roger Browning here again for part 3 of the Patient Blood Management mini tutorial series for obstetrics and gynecology. Thanks for joining me again. Hopefully you've enjoyed the first two. This one's going to be shorter than them. And the topic is, as you've seen already, oral iron. So hopefully you have the foundation knowledge now to understand a little bit about when and where this therapy is going to work. If you haven't watched the talk on iron physiology, or you don't feel like you understand iron physiology that well, it's been a while since you went over it, I do thoroughly encourage you to go back and watch that first. And a bit of a plug again, do the online e-learning packages at bloodsafelearning.org. Very good, and you'll learn even more if you do those. Alright, so we're going to briefly spend a few minutes going over oral iron. The way I'm going to structure this is to talk about the preparations you should take. So that's really important when you're treating patients and recommending oral iron. The time it takes for oral iron to work. I'm going to talk about compliance and follow-up and causes for failure. Okay, preparation, probably one of the key points. This is covered really well by a lot of the other educational resources that I referred to. Have referred you to, but basically the preparation that you recommend if someone has an established iron deficiency, or especially iron deficiency anemia, you need to recommend a preparation that contains at least 100 milligrams of elemental iron. And really useful, this is for maternity patients, but these iron preparations are relevant to any woman or man who has iron deficiency. This is produced by the Australian Red Cross, so it's a great thing that you can get this for free, download from their website and use it in your institution or clinical practice, however you like. This basically shows all of the recommended products that are available here in Australia that will do the job. And there's a really good diagram on the second page, which is this is probably the most important point, is that many over-the-counter preparations that are sold as iron supplements contain very small amounts of iron. For example, some of the examples that are shown here, 5 milligrams of elemental iron. So in order to actually treat someone with an appropriate dose, e.g. 100 milligrams of oral iron, say for example you chose to use the Blackmores Pregnancy and Breastfeeding Gold preparation, you need 13 to 20 tablets. So basically what's going to happen is women are going to take these tablets, think they're fixing their problem, going to love the tablets because they don't get very much in the way of side effects, i.e. nausea and constipation, but months down the line they're going to be very disappointed to see that in fact nothing's got better. So a bit of disappointing all around for everyone. So it's important to educate people about these, important to educate clinicians, healthcare workers and patients to take the right preparation. Okay, what are the causes for failure? So let's say that the patient is taking the right preparation to treat their iron deficiency or their iron deficiency anemia. What are the most common causes for failure of oral iron? The oral iron is probably the best preparation, it was the best first-line approach for most patients. It's pretty safe, it's simple, and if people can tolerate it and they can comply with it and take it for a long enough period of time, 3 to 6 months usually, then it works really well. So it's a good thing to recommend. It's important to keep in mind reasons why it may not work. Now, these are probably the ones that spring to mind. Most commonly, what happens is that some unlucky individuals develop adverse effects, particularly GI upset, especially things like constipation and nausea. And they'll tolerate that to a degree, but usually that will lead to non-compliance at some stage. And obviously, if you need to take these tablets for 3 to 6 months, in order to fully correct your iron deficiency, that's not a good thing. One of the other things which I think is sometimes not discussed perhaps in as much is psychosocial factors. Some of the patients you see may have very chaotic and disrupted lives for various psychosocial reasons. I certainly know that in some of the patients I've seen in my experience over the years, where they have, don't even attend antenatal clinics or have any of the normal antenatal care, it's quite unlikely that they're going to be a compliant individual who's going to take 6 months worth of oral iron to correct their iron deficiency anemia. So you need to really be paying attention to that, I think, as well when you're assessing patients for oral iron therapy. Yeah, and that links in equally to ability to follow up and assess the effect. So if you really don't have some sort of thorough method or reliable method of following them up, checking that it's working, checking that they're taking the tablets, then you need to be thinking, A, how you can improve that, or B, whether this is the right approach. And then finally, other reasons for timing. Yes, there are patients, there are people out there who do actually take the tablets but for some and for a long time, and they do all the right things, but for some reason it doesn't seem to work. I've written down here timing, so sometimes if people take it with food, with the wrong food, it's not absorbed very well. The advice is you are supposed to take it at least half an hour before food or 2 hours after food, and avoid things like dairy, tea and coffee. Vitamin C is a good thing. It's supposed to increase the absorption. And probably one other thing which I haven't mentioned, which I probably should, is skip my mind, but I'm going to, and that's what it is, I'm going to mention it here, is people who take the tablets, but for some reason it is not absorbed. Now that goes back, if you remember from our last tutorial, especially people who have high hepcidin states, so they have downregulation of the ferroportin. This is a bit of revision for you guys, and that means that the oral iron that they swallow doesn't get transported across the intestinal lumen into the bloodstream and they don't absorb it. So it just basically just can't get into the body, even if they're doing the right thing. So think of that. Common causes, I'm told, in the community are celiac disease, inflammatory bowel disease, and there are temporary states in individuals who have undergone things like acute surgery or been through a stressful event, which is called as an acute stress response. Okay. Alright, I think I've covered most of the points that I wanted to cover. If I haven't, we'll probably come up, we can probably mention them in some of the cases that we might go through in some future talks. These are the best things to learn this stuff from. Go and do the Blood Safe e-learning package. The iron deficiency anemia one, which is relevant for all patients. And then even more specifically, if you are just involved in obstetrics, the obstetric blood management one, which is even better, I reckon, if your main area of practice is obstetrics. It's all there, and a big shout out to Trudy and Amanda who I know were involved in the making of those really great packages. Okay, thanks everyone for listening. Next one I'm going to do is actually on intravenous iron, which is something that I've been involved in a little bit more, I must admit, and even done a few clinical studies in, and something I'm interested in, so I'm really looking forward to that one. Probably take a bit longer, so hopefully you're looking forward to that as well. See you there. Come back next time. Thanks for listening.